Blog Talk Radio.
Unless you're competing, who the hell wants to go there?
No,
I thought this was an interesting article. 10 sobering realizations that the U.S. Eastern U.S. power grid is teaching us about a real collapse. Now, if anybody's heard the news recently, you know, there are over 5 million people that were without power this week and last week, okay, due to the storms, due to the heat wave and some unexpected storms. But now there's 1.4 million people out of power still.
And the
blazing heat, you know, 100.
In the wake of violent storms, the power remains out today for millions of Americans across several U.S. cities. Governors of Virginia, West Virginia, and Ohio have declared a state of emergency. Over a dozen people are now confirmed dead, and millions are sweltering in blistering temperatures while having no air conditioning or refrigeration. As their frozen foods melt into processed goo, they're waking up to a few lessons that we would all be wise to remember. See some shocking photos of recent weather events, including a trampoline strung over the power lines. Well, we could go to that later.
You can go to AccuWeather.com for that one.
And news /shocking images. Here are 10 hard lessons we're all learning, or relearning as the case may be, as we watch this situation unfold. Number one, the power grid is ridiculously vulnerable to disruptions and failure. All it takes is Mother Nature unleashing a little wind and storm, and entire human cities are cut off from their power grid. Wind and trees, in other words, can destroy in seconds what takes humans years to construct.
Number two, without electricity, acquiring food and water in a major U.S. city can become a difficult task. Right now, masses of people across the eastern U.S. are scrambling to try to find food and water. Fortunately for them, malls and gas stations are open, providing processed food, water, and air conditioning. That's because the power outages are fragmented, affecting some neighborhoods but not others. In a total grid-down scenario, food and water supplies in a given U.S. city will disappear almost overnight. It's much the same for gasoline, batteries, and even ammunition. All these supplies and many more will simply be stripped from the shelves.
Number three, most people are simply not prepared and therefore worsen any crises. The average American citizen practices zero preparedness. They're 100% dependent on the power grid, the city water supply, and long-distance food deliveries to their grocery store. They have no backup plan, no stored food, no emergency mindset, and no hope of surviving in a real crisis. All they know to do is call 911 when something goes wrong, and 911 simply won't be there. As a result, their lack of preparedness worsens any crisis. Instead of being part of the solution, these people become a burden on the emergency services and supplies desperately needed across the region. Hilariously, today's citygoers actually consider malls, and movie theaters to be places of refuge. As Fox News reported today, on Saturday, many people flocked to places like malls and movie theaters in the hope the lights would be on again when they returned home.
And number four, cell phones are a fragile technology that can't be counted on in an emergency. One of the more interesting observations about the current crisis is that many cell phone towers are out of service. That's because they have no electricity and or they have been damaged by wind or debris. As a result, people who depend on cell phones for their lifelines to friends, relatives, and 9/11 emergency services are suddenly left with non-functioning devices. Even in areas where cell phone towers were still operating, many people had no place to charge their phones because their own homes were cut off from electricity. But when the grid is up, there are no storms, no flares, or disruptions, and cell phones are truly amazing devices. But they are vulnerable to every small-scale natural event, and therefore cannot be relied on when you need them the most.
Number five, the Internet is wildly vulnerable to natural disasters. According to news reports, these storms took down a portion of the Amazon cloud, and this in turn shut down Netflix, Pinterest, and Instagram. Those services have now been restored, but they were offline for several hours, during which many of their users no doubt thought the world was coming to an end.
And the government uses every crisis to tell everybody what to do. The U.S. considered the quote from the CDC telling people what to do. The U.S. Centers of Disease Control and Prevention was among many government agencies trying to keep people informed. And from knowing when the food in your sudden inoperable freezer can't be eaten to taking a cool bath if you don't have AC. Seriously, does the government have to tell you to take a cool bath in order to avoid overheating? Do people not know when food has spoiled? And even more strangely, is it now the role of the U.S. government to tell people, everybody, what to do in every emergency? Whatever happened to common sense? I can tell you that what? It moved out to the country. Out in the country, Texas, Georgia, Kentucky, and just about everywhere else, ranchers and farmers still have common sense. They know about backup water supplies. They can figure things out for themselves. It seems to be city people who need the most instruction from Washington, D.C., because many of them have forgotten the fundamental skills of human survival. Their lives depend entirely on the grid.
Number 7. 911 and other emergency services are quickly overwhelmed. In Washington's Northern Virginia suburbs, emergency 911 call centers were out of service. Residents were told to call local police and fire departments. Huge trees toppled across streets in the nation's capital, cumberling cars. Cell phone and internet service was spotty. Gas stations shut down and residents were urged to conserve water. Fortunately, there are so far been no reports of outbreaks of violence or social unrest, but that's a timing issue. If the power stays off for another few days and food and water remain hard to come by, the politeness of society quickly erodes and you end up with desperate people doing desperate things. Calling 911 is, of course, completely useless. This is a scenario where home defense and self-defense skills can truly be life-saving.
And hey, a national grid down situation would be far more complex to repair. The recent storms that caused the grid down situation for millions of Americans was a local event, and its repair and restoration has been aided by workers arriving from outside the affected regions. In a national grid down scenario, however, there will be no excess human capital to lend to the situation. Every worker will be busy trying to restore the power grid in their own home regions. And this means repairs will take significantly longer, and according to some experts like David Chalk and James Wesley Rawls, a national grid down scenario has the potential of being unable to be repaired at all, resulting in years of no power grid, which could obviously unleash mass death across the U.S. population. Of course, across all 50 states, only Texas has its own independent power grid, and even that grid has been strained by recent high temperatures.
Many emergencies arrive unannounced. The eastern seaboard of the USA was shocked by this recent Draco windstorm. Unlike a hurricane, which approaches over a period of several days, the Draco event arrived without notice and struck without warning. This is yet another reminder to be prepared at all times because many events arrive with no notice whatsoever. The power grid can be taken down by an EMP weapon, and a sufficiently strong solar flare could unleash hundreds of nuclear meltdowns across the planet. These and other events would strike with virtually no warning. If you don't already have gas in the tank, a go bag ready to rock, and your self-defense skills finely tuned, you may be caught unprepared.
And number 10, the Mother Nature will humble humanity.
You got that right.
Right. Anytime human beings get too arrogant and too big-headed about all their amazing cell phone technology, high-rise cities, and nuclear power plants, Mother Nature just shrugs and sends forth a tsunami of water or wind as a subtle reminder to stay humble. All of humanity's greatest constructs are but fragile toys to the truly awesome power of Mother Nature and the resilience of planet Earth. If the power grid goes down across planet Earth for just 1 year, 90% of human civilization will perish. And along with it, all the DVDs, Nike shoes, and designer bling as well. And even the entire frictional or fictional construct of society's laws and banking systems will cease to exist. That's because they are all fictional to begin with. Mother Nature is real.
Consciousness is real. Seeds are real.
Okay.
But much of what humanity has so far created is paper-thin and temporary. They can all cease to exist in the blink of a cosmic eye. There is nothing humanity has yet done that contributes anything notable to the universe. We are but specks of irrelevant dust against the backdrop of a beautifully woven tapestry of life, energy, and consciousness. If the universe is keeping score of lasting achievement, human civilization has still not risen above zero.
Whoa.
We are fragile beings exploring a sea of such greatness and scale that our own lives seem silly by comparison. What humans think of as a natural disaster is but a tiny expression of natural patterns to Mother Nature. If we truly hope to survive as a species, we would be wise to remember how insignificant we really are in the greatest scope of things, and why we must learn to respect nature and the universe rather than arrogantly thinking we have conquered it with GMOs, nuclear power, and a super collider. Humanity has much to learn and much to demonstrate before we count for anything. Only through humility do we even stand a chance of seeking to gain that understanding rather than destroying ourselves from runaway scientific arrogance. Now, for some preparedness solutions you may wish to consider.
There you go. Got a reliable flashlight? When the grid goes down, how will you light your way? I use Phoenix LED flashlights, and we've got them available at discounted prices. You can buy it, go to supplysource.com.
I don't know why that's so special.
I don't know either, but it's probably self-generated battery or some sort.
Mm-hmm.
And survival and preparedness courses available now for the Health Ranger, from the Health Ranger. Now, Be Prepared, Not Scared, Food Security by the Health Ranger. A huge downloadable program covering everything you need to know about food and water for emergency. That might be worth doing.
Yeah.
Programs, you can go to programs.webseed.com/beprepared. Food. That's too many things
yeah.
to recognize.
Just go to
Health Ranger, healthranger.com
yeah.
or naturalnews.com. And then Surthrival. It's a large course of videos and downloadable audios covering urban survival skills, wilderness skills, light and heat, how to build your own water filter, and discussion of reliable gear. That's a good idea.
Be Prepared and Not Scared, Financial Preparedness by the Health Ranger and Robert Scott Bell, a downloadable audio program giving you financial survival skills to avoid the worst of the coming economic collapse, practical step-by-step solutions to avoid losing your savings and your assets.
And How to Protect and Defend Yourself by the Health Ranger, discussing the self-defense, family protection, practical alert devices, firearms, cooperating with local law enforcement, and more. You can get that on naturalnews.com, too. These are all good things. No?
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. Okay. So, anyway, I wanted to go to one that another article I want to read tonight, which is really interesting. Death of the Birds and Bees Across America.
Kind of
yeah, and then there's one more that I don't know if you want to go to this first, but it's about the Fukushima plutonium problems
how it's all across the globe.
Did you see that? Yeah,
oh,
it's
it
really
very,
quite frightening.
Yeah, it was very scary.
I think it should be read.
I don't know where it is. I remember seeing it
at the bottom. I'm not
sure. With a map.
Yeah, I'll get to it. Let's go to the other page. Okay. Well, we'll go to that right after this one. I wanted to read this one about the birds and the bees.
Mm-hmm.
What's going on there? Oh, I love this one. I want to get to this one, too. The Obama, the empty suit.
That would be a great one to read.
Yeah, that is a good one. But since we're on...
Did you just pass the map?
Yeah, here it is. Okay. Death of the Birds and Bees Across America. This was quite disturbing.
Also, those chemicals this spring.
So much stuff. Birds and bees are something most of us take for granted as part of nature. This is from globalresearch.com, r.ca, rather. The expression teaching about the birds and bees to explain the process of human reproduction to young people is not an accidental expression. Birds and bees contribute to the essence of life on our planet.
Mm-hmm.
And a study by the U.S. Department of Agriculture estimated that perhaps one-third of our entire diet is dependent directly or indirectly upon insect-pollinated plants. The honeybees is the most important pollinator of agricultural crops. Honeybees pollinate over 70 out of 100 crops that in turn provide 90% of the world's food. They pollinate most fruits and vegetables, including apples, oranges, strawberries, onions, and carrots. But while managed honeybee populations have increased over the last 50 years, bee colony populations have decreased significantly in many European and North American nations. Simultaneously, crops that are dependent on insects for pollination have increased. The phenomenon has received the curious designation of colony collapse disorder, and implying it could be caused by a number of factors. Serious recent scientific studies, however, point to a major cause, use of highly toxic systemic pesticides in agriculture since about 2004.
If governments in the EU and the USA and other countries fail to impose a total ban on certain chemical insecticides, not only could bees become a thing of the past, the human species could face staggering new challenges merely to survive. The immediate threat comes from the widespread proliferation of commercial insecticides containing the highly toxic chemical with the improbable name neonicotinoids. Neonicotinoids are a group of insecticides chemically similar to nicotine. They act on the central nervous system of insects, but also on bees and small songbirds. Recent evidence suggests they could also affect human brain development in the newborn. Some 5 to 6 years back, reports began to circulate from around the world, especially out of the U.S., and then increasingly from around the EU, especially in the U.K., that entire bee colonies were disappearing. Since 2004, over a million beehives have died across the United States, and beekeepers in 25 states report what is called colony collapse disorder. In winter of 2009, an estimated one-fifth of beehives in the UK were lost, double the natural rate. Three government authorities claimed it was a mystery. And in the USA, a fact sheet from the EPA on Bayer's AG clothianidin, a widely used nicotinoid, warned. Available data indicates that clothianidin on corn and canola should result in minimal acute toxic risk to birds. However, assessments show that exposure to treated seeds through ingestion may result in chronic toxic risk to an endangered in small
to non-endangered
and endangered small birds, and acute chronic toxicity risk to non-endangered and endangered mammals. Oh, nice.
Isn't that great? Alarming UK results. A private UK research organization, Bug Life and Soil Association, undertook tests to try to determine cause of the bee death. They found that the decline was caused in part by a group of pesticides called neonicotinoids are systemic chemicals that kill insects by getting into the cells of the plant. In Britain, it's widely used for crops like oilseed, rape, and for production of potted plants. The neonicotinoids are found in the UK in products including Chinook, used on oilseed wrap, and Bayer, UK-720 used in the production of potted plants, which then ends up in gardens and homes around the country. The new study examined in detail the most comprehensive array of peer-reviewed research into possible long-term effects of nicotinoids. This conclusion was that nicotinoid pesticides damage the health and life cycle of bees over the long term by affecting the nervous system.
That's terrible.
I know. The report noted nicotinoids may be a significant factor contributing to current bee declines and could also contribute to declines in other non-target invertebrate species.
Like birds.
Yeah. The, well, invertebrate.
Oh.
Non-targeted invertebrate species.
I wonder what that would be. Other insects.
Well, yeah.
Insects.
Yeah. Like centipedes and all of that. The organization called for a total ban on pesticides containing any neonicotinoids.
The president of the UK Soil Association, Peter Melchett, told the press that pesticides were causing a continued decline in pollinating insects, risking a multi-million pound farming industry. The UK is notorious for taking the most relaxed approach to pesticide safety in the EU. Bug Life's report shows that this puts it at risk. Pollination services vital for UK agriculture, he said. Indeed, in March 2012, Sir Robert Watson, chief scientist at the British government's Department of Environment, announced that his government was reconsidering its allowance of neonicotinoids used in the UK. Watson told the British newspaper, "We will absolutely look at the University of Stirling work, the French work, and the American work that came out a couple of months ago. We must look at that, at this in a real detail to see whether or not the current British position is correct or incorrect. I want this all reassessed very, very carefully. To date, no policy changes ensued, however. Given the seriousness of the scientific studies and the claims of danger, a prudent policy would have been to provisionally suspend further use of neonicotinoids pending further research. No such luck."
EPA corruption. That's a good one.
Yeah.
In the United States, the government agency responsible for approving or banning chemicals deemed dangerous to the environment is the Environmental Protection Agency. In 2003, over the clear warnings of our own scientists, this EPA licensed a neonicotinoid called clothantin and patented by the German Bayer AG together with a Japanese company, Takata. It is sold under the brand name Poncho. It was immediately used for over 88 million acres of U.S. corn in the 2004 crop, and since that time, the shocking death of more than 1 million beehives across the corn prairies of the Midwest have been reported. The political appointees at EPA at the time allowed Bayer to receive a license for Poncho despite the official judgment of EPA scientists that clothantin was highly toxic to bees by contact and oral exposure, and that it was highly mobile in soil and groundwater, very likely to migrate into streams, ponds, and other fields, where it would be absorbed by wildflowers and grow on to kill more bees and non-target insects like butterflies and bumblebees. The warning from a leaked EPA memo dated September 28, 2005, summarized the Environmental Fates and Effects Division Environmental Risk Assessment of clothantin, which it said will remain toxic to bees for days after a spray application, and beehives or in honeybees, the effects of this toxic exposure will include lethal and or sublethal effects in the larvae and reproduction effects to the queen.
The EPA scientists...
This is all under the goddamn Bush administration. You know what I mean?
The EPA scientists judged it to be many, many times more toxic than bees, other nicotinoids, imidacloprid, sold under the brand name Gaucho, which itself is 7,000 more times toxic to bees than DDT, which was banned in the U.S. in 1972, and proved its toxic effects on animals and humans. Then in January of this year, another U.S. government agency, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, published a significant news report from scientists under the direction of Jeffrey Pettus of the USDA Bee Research Laboratory. The study published in the German Scientific Journal was explosive. The Pettus study concluded that careful control experiments with bees exposed and not exposed to neonicotinoids clearly demonstrated that there was an interaction between sublethal exposure. Well, anyway, it's causing the problem. It's all too technical.
But the thing that's interesting is the effect on human brain.
We'll just jump to that. What does it say?
Yes, but most alarming of all is the evidence that exposure to neonicotinoids are HAHS, horrific possible effects on humans as well as on birds and bees. This professor, Hank Tenix, says that today the major illnesses confronting children in the United States include a number of psychosocial and behavioral conditions, neurodevelopmental disorders, including learning disabilities, dyslexia, mental retardation, attention deficit, and autism, occurrence of more prevalent than previously thought, affecting 5 to 10% of the 4 million children born in the United States annually. Beyond childhood, incidence rates of chronic neurodegenerative diseases of adult life, such as Parkinson's and dementia, have increased markedly. And these trends raise the possibility that exposure in early life acts as triggers of later illnesses, perhaps by reducing the number of cells in essential regions of the brain to below the level needed to maintain function in the face of advancing age. Prenatal and childhood exposures to pesticides have emerged as a significant risk factor, explaining impacts on brain structure and the health that can increase the risk of neurological disease later in life. There is also growing evidence suggesting persistent exposure to plants sprayed with neonicotinoids could be responsible for damage to the human brain, including the recent sharp rise in incidence of autism in children. Tenekes, referring to recent studies of the effects of various exposure of neonicotinoids to rats, noted, accumulating evidence suggests that chronic exposure to nicotine causes many adverse effects in the normal development of a child. Prenatal exposure to nicotine is a known risk factor for sudden infant death syndrome, low birth weights, infants, and attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. And therefore, the neonicotinoids can adversely affect human health, especially in the developing brain.
And then it gets a little...
Yeah, and it says... it goes on and on. They banned it in many EU countries. So, I mean, they're so advanced in this stuff, and we're so damned.
We're run by corporations.
I mean, we are so.
Give a donation to both the Republicans and the Democrats, and they lay down.
Yeah.
What's left?
It's a joke. It's a total, complete, and utter farce. Yeah. And here's one of the reasons. Obama's defection. Former supporters lambast President Obama. Okay.
Let's go to that article.
Yeah, and it explains why. Because I've been blasting his ass since he was elected. I like this. This is from Press TV, too, which is cool. It's Iranian press. You want to read?
Yeah. There were two American elections this past week that spoke to the power of incumbency. Despite corruption charges, the venerable black Democrat Charles Rangel, now in his 80s, was reelected to Congress by his Harlem constituency. Orrin Hatch, a cranky conservative Republican, beat back a challenge to his Senate seat from hard-to-right Tea Partiers in Utah. It takes a lot to unseat an American politician with seniority. Barack Obama is hoping that he, too, will be returned to office, despite all the money and conservative fervor trying to topple him. Never in history has so much lucre and political animus been targeted at one politician. The Supreme Court's ratification of key provisions of his health care reform will buttress his appeal, giving him some new bragging rights at a time when the economy remains depressed. Yet even his former economic advisor, Larry Summers, says the economy will not rally enough to help him. So to try to change the media focus, he's increased global war making to burnish his image as a patriotic hardliner. The tough sanctions he backed against Iran are soon in effect, but ironic likely they may lead to backlash if oil prices rise, as they are likely to. This race is not just a right-left battleground. Obama is under fire from his own supporters for his failures and perceived betrayals linked in a large part to his foreign policy, not health care or advocacy for same-sex marriage or immigration reform. In some ways, this year's context echoes the way the anti-Vietnam War movement rallied against the then pro-war liberal Democrat Hubert Humphrey in 1968. In 1968 is remembered as a year of surging protests, the world over just like protests the world over just like today. Activism was at a high point in America, too, so when Democrats chose a candidate struck in Cold War pro-war stance, there's a rebellion against the party by its own faithful. There were protests in the streets at the Democratic Convention in Chicago and growing support for an electoral challenge by Bobby Kennedy. Democrats were at war with each other as Republican candidate Richard Nixon claimed to have a plan to end the war. As we know, Nixon's plan was an escalation, but he won, only to be driven from office 2 years later. While liberal advocacy groups like Move On and some environmental coalitions rallied to Obama largely because the alternative is considered much worse, criticisms of his hawkishness, caution, and centrism among progressives reaches a fever pitch. In fact, just this week, he reportedly begged his supporters to send more money as donations fall off. He may be panicking. Political scientist Michael Brenner writes, Barack Obama received a blast last week from his former Harvard Law professors who made the case that he must be defeated. Roberto Unger's argument boils down to a damning indictment spelling out charges that the president has betrayed the progressive cause and those who militated for his election. The alleged betrayal is all the more painful, Professor Unger says, because it reveals a man who never was what he claimed to be. Deep down, he is a conventionally conservative person, not just a politician who bowed to electoral expediency. Moreover, he claims that Obama has nailed the lid on the coffin of the Democratic Party that has veered sharply away from its historical constituency and principles. Brenner himself, a hard-nosed pragmatist and analyst, seems personally persuaded, writing, how can one approve what he has done? How can one express approval of the man himself? Can one do so with a clear conscience? The question cannot be cavalierly cast aside as an exercise in vanity, as a naive indulgence of misplaced moral purity. Okay.
That's true.
It is true. You want to go there?
Yeah, sure. It is true that the morality of an individual's action and ultimate ends always coexist uneasily and with standards of political ethics. But the two cannot always be reconciled. It is unreasonable for someone to feel in his heart that he cannot tolerate pulling the Obama lever, that the act itself sullies and degrades who he is, that it could even hamper his future ability to carry on as a public person with a sense of integrity unimpaired. I personally do not find it unreasonable. Maybe not unreasonable, but is it realistic? Some on the left think so, believing that a conservative Romney administration will make a clearer target than a waffling Obama. Others say no, he must hold on our nose and vote for him and hold on to the White House as a break against what will certainly be worse. I agree with this. But the problem with this is quite a long article. I wanted to go to one more before we go to our sports
segment in a little while.
But it's true. I mean, I have to hold my nose when I see Obama. He just makes me sick. And so does these other guys. I have to mention this because it was such a joke. Show of Business News, Miss Holocaust. Yes, it's true, folks. The Huffington Post reported yesterday that Hava Hershkovitz, 79, was crowned Miss Holocaust Survivor as a pageant held in Israel on Thursday. A Thursday and most unusual event, 14 Jewish women who survived the horrors of Shoah paraded vyingly for the honor of being crowned Israel's first Miss Holocaust survivor. Billed by the organizers as a celebration of life, the nearly 300 women from across Israel who registered for the competition were whittled down to 14 finalists who appeared on Thursday. Miss Holocaust survivor.
I don't know why.
This is disgusting. Anyway, sorry, folks. I blew that one. That was not a good move. There was one more article I wanted to get to tonight before we bring it in. And this one is on the risk of plutonium.
Excuse me, our switchboard. I don't know what happened to it. So you better check.
Mine's on,
yes, it's all right.
Yeah.
I don't know.
How did it happen?
Closest
places are Guam, Hawaii, Alaska, and California. If you compare the numbers after March 11th between California and Guam has detected 78 times higher plutonium, 239 times, 6 times higher uranium, 234, and 16 times higher uranium, and 13 times higher uranium than California. Radiation fallout patterns have long taught us that the closer one is to the source of the contamination, the higher the radiation exposure. Of course, the heavy nuclear particles fall to the ground quite quickly, while thinning quickly as the distance opens up. And being downwind of the atomic explosion or nuclear meltdown is not healthy, for people in close proximity will absorb that many more radioactive particles from air, water, and food. It is also getting worse. TEPCO, the operator of Japan's crippled Fukushima nuclear power plant, said Wednesday, last week, that it recorded amounts of radiation had been detected in the basement of reactor number one, further hampered cleanup operations. TEPCO could sample for the basement, but and so on. It goes on, but they're saying that because of this, it's just unbelievable what's about to happen here.
Yeah.
International nuclear experts are criticizing efforts by Japanese nuclear industry to stockpile surplus plutonium for use in reactors, using MOX fuel as a combination of plutonium and uranium. And the MOX plant was a key component of Japanese nuclear cycle and was supposed to allow reuse of spent fuel, resulting in a self-contained cycle. However, reprocessing has turned out to be more expensive than simply disposing of spent fuel by burying it, and the process itself has encountered numerous technical difficulties and public opposition. And Japan currently has 35 tons of plutonium stored worldwide and hopes to produce another half ton within the next 9 months, raising global concerns. Okay, so we're in big trouble, folks, and
yeah,
they're just not doing anything about it.
Let's
so,
check and see if we have our Woody
yeah,
in the ring call in.
Right.
If I can't do it in mine.
Not yet.
He should be on in just a minute.
So, we got about radio hand.
Oh,
if you think there is nothing to worry about, consider the fact that the cooling system for the spent fuel rod at the crippled Fukushima Daiichi Power Plant number 4 reactor automatically shut down Saturday, the 30th of June.
Huh.
And temperatures began to rise, but fortunately, according to the reports, they reestablished cooling on Sunday. I have written that humanity is hanging by a thread in terms of our vulnerability to building number 4 coming down. Radiation at the plant continues to increase, so it is possible the day will arrive that no repairs can be made and the fuel pool will overheat to the point where it will all go up in flames. And then we're done, folks. I mean, we're nearly done now.
Well, let's have a check and see if our regular guest is going to be on. I wonder if it's coming through.
Yeah.
It's really odd.
Well, maybe he's late. Okay. We were supposed to have Woody in the ring, but I don't know.
He should be on in a few minutes.
I don't know if that's going to happen right now. And in the meantime, let's see what else we got here. There's some good articles tonight. Oh, this was really funny. Senator Kirk.
Strange
obsession. Scheme to define away Palestinian refugees. In May 2012, Senator Mark Kirk made an outstanding discovery, which had escaped scores of politicians, diplomats, and experts for 6 decades. He discovered that the number of Palestinian refugees is not 5 million, as the United Nations Relief and Work Agency's records show, but merely 30,000. And their credit for this discovery goes to AIPAC and Israel, as they have advanced this discovery for the past 4 years. Kirk took the signal and proposed a motion to the Congress, which has passed after a mild amendment. And within a week, dozens of pro-Israel and Jewish sites in the USA, Canada, and Australia reported the discovery. For them, defining away refugees is akin to an end run on conflict and war. Dispossessed Palestinians will remain dispossessed, Palestinians with no recourse, and the interpretation is nothing more than a gimmick which, if anything, will prolong the conflict and increase the suffering of millions of refugees.
Let's go back to the studio.
Profound.
You know what? Maybe this isn't working. Maybe we need to call him. Why don't we give him a call?
Okay.
We'll call her.
Okay. Let's try his number here.
Hello?
Hi, are you going to be on?
Hey, Peter, are you there?
Oh, yeah. Oh, man, it's time to be on already?
Yeah.
Damn, I'm at, oh, shit. Yeah, I can. We're not live, right? Right now? You don't have me on, right?
Yeah, go ahead.
You were on live there, buddy, but okay.
Give us just a few minutes.
We got you on mute if you want.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Are you ready?
Go ahead. Hit me whenever you're ready.
You ready?
Yeah. Hit it.
Okay.
Okay. Go for it.
Okay. Sports fan, watch your head down the rope. What?
Just step into the ring with Woody.
Thank you. Sports fans, watch your heads on the ropes as you step into the ring with Woody.
Cards, fans.
Tonight's topic, baseball. And let's get right down to it. As we come on to the All-Star break this year, we find the Yankees and the Tampa Bay Rays fighting it out for first place. They're currently playing this evening, and the game is going back and forth. The Rays are up 5-4. Many people at the beginning of the season pretty much thought that this was going to be the race. It was going to be, you know, the Rays and the Yankees battling it out, and the Red Sox just weren't going to make it this year. And you know, that's pretty much holding true. The Red Sox are really faltering. They've had a lot of injury problems. Many people seem to think that has a lot to do with the new manager, Bobby Valentine. But my personal opinion is I don't think they ever corrected their problems from last season, and they thought that the simple hiring of a new manager was going to make everything much better, but that's not really the case. Now, I think they finally are starting to realize that one of their first moves they've done was to get rid of Kevin Youkilis. He's always been in trouble in the clubhouse. He has a big mouth and is known to be just kind of an unpleasant person in general. So they got rid of him, and they didn't get very much in return, but I think it was more of a salary dump and more of a good move for the clubhouse. So, good for the Red Sox, I guess. I assume it's going to end up working out for them. So, other than that, I think it's probably just going to go down to the wire between those two teams. It just doesn't. And I would assume that the Yankees probably will prevail, probably due to their. They have a lot more money than the Rays have. But as far as that goes, I would have to say the Red Sox are definitely out of it for the season. They've got just too many injuries. I think was probably the wrong pick for a manager. He's very fiery in your face. So I just don't see this lasting. He'll probably be fired by the end of the year. That would be my guess. Even if he makes the whole season, which I don't know if he's going to or not. But that's it for this week. All my witheads out there, Ron and Mark. Boy, everyone at FF. Thank you.
That was quick.
All right. Thank you, Woody. We'll play a little music.
Get them out. Yeah.
Keep up with the news.
And be here on for Thursday night. We'll be here Thursday night.